I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome. It's episode 116 of We Are Going Up. The weather might still be causing chaos, but it's not put us off. We're here as ever. I'm Mark Crossley, and alongside me, a man who I'm sure would much rather be watching Prince at Shepherd's Bush Empire tonight than doing this podcast. It's David Cameron Walker.
Hello.
You've not managed to get a ticket.
I'm still miserable. I didn't go yesterday.
Favourite Prince tune?
Oh, Christ. It changes all the time. One currently that is in favour with me is Strange Relationship from Sign of the Times.
Okay, Karma Queen is also here.
Hello, mate.
Have you got a favourite Prince record?
Yeah, I can't say I'm that much of a connoisseur of Prince, so I'd have to go for something like, you know, Raspberry Beret or Purple Rain. Some of the obvious ones.
Well, here's one of my tweets of the week, actually. I spotted this. Unnamed insider on Twitter tweeted, "I paid £20 to see Prince, but I parted like it was 1999.
Brilliant.
Get it?
He's not going to laugh, is he? Look at him. He doesn't want to be here.
Well, in fact, you're pretty much sick of football, aren't you? I can tell just because of that late equaliser on Saturday.
Yeah, I am.
You're done with
Roll on, summer.
Before we go any further, you've got 50 minutes more of that. A quick reminder that thanks to our friends Audible, you can still get your ears around a free audiobook of your choice. If you're a brand new listener, you've just found us. Firstly, thank you very much. Spread the word. Secondly, you can get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook of your choosing right now with up to 100,000 to pick from. So that's gone up 20,000 all of a sudden in the last couple of months. Audible.co.uk/going up right now is where you need to go. That's audible.co.uk/going up. Thank you for all the comments about the recruitment special last week. Later today, we're going to be reviewing the weekend's action, reflecting on Sheffield United's Cup exploits, plus naming and shaming the Football League side who haven't scored at home in 7.5 hours. David Bream from the Burton Mail is also going to come on and tell us about a big win for the Brewers at Morecambe on Saturday. They won by 1-0 thanks to a strike from Young Wolves Loney Zeli Ismail, and they now sit just 1 point off the automatic promotion places. First though, we are going to begin in the Championship this week. Manchester United Loney Federico Makeda scored twice as Birmingham City won 2-0 at Charlton on Saturday to lift themselves 9 points clear of the relegation zone. It's fair to say it's been a difficult couple of years for Lee Clark at St Andrews so far, problems both on and off the field. This week it was confirmed that the club's troubled owner Carson Young has severed all official command of the Blues and their parent company and now trading again. But what does that actually mean for the fans? And is the future actually any brighter at all? Let's speak to a man who should be able to shed some light on this for us. Ian Danter is a big Birmingham fan and extremely recognisable, I'm sure, to you as a commentator and presenter on TalkSport. In fact, his website claims, I don't know if you're going to dispute this, DC, that he's the only presenter in the station's history to have worked in every single time slot around the 24-hour clock.
I think the only show that he hasn't done is the fishing show, Fisherman's okay. Blues. And I still think he could do it.
Brilliant.
He's got to, just to finish off the set, surely.
You can catch Dance every single Saturday on Football First in the evening from 9 o'clock. And Ian, I believe we had you on the show during our debut season a few years ago. Now, a lot has changed at Birmingham since then. Let's start with the on-the-field stuff first, though. How big a win was that at Charlton on Saturday?
Well, it's indicative of how well, actually, Birmingham have been playing away from home in extremis, because with the ragtag squad of players that Lee Clark has at his disposal, and by that I mean the Freeze, the Loans, the Bosmans, the unwanted, the unloved, it seems, that he's had to deal with for a couple of seasons now, he does seem to be able to fashion a team that can compete and isn't just going to get sucked through the divisions like some clubs have in the past. He's working an almighty oracle, really, with the tools he's been handed. He has clearly got very good relations with some of the clubs he's getting loans from. Manchester United is a case in point. You think of Tyler Blackett and Tom Thorpe, and now Federico Makeda coming in. We've already had Jesse Lingard come from Old Trafford this year. It's just the home form that's been a slight problem. We haven't won at home since October, and we just don't seem to be able to find a way to break teams down in front of our own. But away from home, the Charlton win was one of many very pleasing and promising results on the road.
Yeah, it doesn't bode well for me tomorrow night then. But Dan, so looking at the stuff away from the pitch, which is far more complicated and worrying times for Birmingham fans over the last few years, the chairman, Peter Panu, has claimed that he thinks the club have got a bright future now, now that there appears to have been some sort of resolution with Carson Young. But, I mean, can you try and distill down the events, or the most recent events, and also the kind of timeline of events over the last few years for people who are quite not quite up to speed with the goings-on at Birmingham City?
Well, Carson Young, who up until recently was on the board at both Birmingham International Holdings, the company that effectively owns Birmingham City, and he was also until recently on the board at Birmingham, owns 26% of the club's shares. He's been up on trial in Hong Kong in the Far East on charges of alleged money laundering. That trial has been going on for well over a year. There's been lots of delays and lots of suspensions and lots of red tape surrounding it. But finally, a verdict is due to be delivered on the 28th of this month. Now, what happened was, in the last week or so, Carson Young resigned his position from both Birmingham International Holdings and Birmingham City Football Club, and that was in order that the holding company would be able to relist shares in Birmingham City back on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, because whilst Carson Young is in court, then that sort of precluded shares from being listed. And similarly, if he is found guilty of these charges, then he would immediately not pass the fit and proper persons test as far as the Football League is concerned, and he would therefore have had to relinquish his position. So it's almost as if he's sort of taken the wind out of the sails. But that doesn't mean that he no longer has a controlling interest in Birmingham City, because he still owns the shares, nor does it mean that he doesn't have an influence at the club anymore, because the people that are kind of taking his place are, in some cases, in-law relatives, in some cases, friends. Nothing has really changed. Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose, is the phrase. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And for Peter Panu to say that the club faces a bright future after a period of 2 years now where he has presided over the fire sale to end all fire sales, where the family silver has been sold off piece by miserable piece at cheap knockdown prices, in my opinion, in most cases, then for him to say that the club has a bright future is frankly laughable.
Are you perhaps surprised that Lee Clark has stayed on, actually? And I mean, I look just at the list of football managers in the Football League at the moment, and he is actually the fourth longest serving in the Championship, perhaps bizarrely. But you know, his hands have been tied a little bit with transfers. He talks already about the amount of low knees he's brought in. He talks about frustrations. So are you pleasantly surprised that Lee Clark's decided to see it out?
Well, he's a man of principle to a degree. I also think he has a point to prove. He was accused of having too much money to spend at Huddersfield.
On this podcast, quite a lot, I think.
In relative terms. And of course, in this job, he's got no money to spend. So I think he's trying to prove a point that he can effectively manage a club no matter what the financial constraints or non-constraints being placed upon him. Why is he still there? I think it's just a matter of pride and personal principle. I've no idea whether any jobs have come up in the interim period, particularly recently, that have piqued his interest, but he's made no indication of that. I think he feels a debt to the supporters and to those day-to-day staff that run the club, you know, those in the commercial department, people like that. There's a debt of gratitude he owes to them, I think, to just keep the club on an even keel. If he were to go, who on earth would want to take that job and everything that goes with it, particularly in the state of flux that it's in? I think he understands that, and as a man of principle, I think, well, he's probably thinking, right, let's be fair, let's not make it even worse for the club than it already is. It needs some form of continuity, and that form of continuity has to be me.
Absolutely right. I think it was pretty much the only form of continuity at the club. I mean, what's kind of the end game here? If you even you know, can think of such a thing, obviously having been in this kind of flux for so long, what hopes do Birmingham City fans have of their one day, hopefully sooner rather than later, of a decent owner owning this club and be giving you a platform to move forward?
Well, it was about a year ago that the rumour started building that Gianni Paladini wants to... Queen's Park Rangers.
Yeah, so a decent owner.
Was significantly interested in buying the club, and I was told he'd done due diligence. He'd been shown the books, but there then ensued a series of childish public spats between him and Peter Panu, and it became clear that Peter Panu simply did not want to deal with Gianni Paladini, and no matter how close Paladini felt he was getting, or felt he ever got to making an offer that would be accepted, it's clear there's an amount that Carson Young wants, and Gianni Paladini wasn't prepared to make it. And I think it's around about £32 million, supposedly, that is the asking price, bearing in mind that Carson Young paid, stupidly, in my opinion, £81 million to buy it from David Gold, David Sullivan and Karen Brady. Now, I love my club. I love Birmingham City with all my heart. But in no way were we worth £81 million at the time of sale. We were a club that had just got back into the Premier League, didn't necessarily have ourselves established at that time as a Premier League club. We'd sort of flitted between the two divisions over the last decade. We were not a club worth that amount of money. So, unfortunately, because of that stupidly high price that they're paid, they're looking for an equally stupidly high price to sell it, despite having sold Nathan Redmond, Jack Butland, Curtis Davis, the list goes on. So Peter Panu seems to be of the opinion that the club is a going concern with him at the helm and new directors and new shareholders at the helm. And the fans, well... Well, I tell you what actually happens, these boys, is because there's so little information that comes from the Far East, and all the information is drip, 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 drip fed. What happens is supporters turn on anybody they feel isn't giving them all the facts. They feel that local journalists aren't giving them all the facts, and so they give them both barrels. I cannot think of a more misguided way of directing your anger than to those who are trying their damnedest to find that information, can't get any, report that, and then are slagged off by certain very small but unfortunately very vocal sections of the club support who are just looking for a scapegoat as well, you know, because they can't touch the owners, they can't get stuck into them. So
does,
other people
does that include
it.
The manager as well with some
no,
fans?
No. Not now. There was a time early in his spell at Birmingham, it was September of 2000, let me get this right, 2012, when they'd lost at Coventry in the League Cup in September, and it was a really poor performance and result. And there were a few people saying, well, is he made of the right stuff? You know, it was early in his career. And there has been a little undercurrent of Clark out during his time at the club, but... The good away form and the fact that he clearly cares about winning games of football, and it clearly really irks him when Birmingham lose, I think that's endeared him or won over a section of the support that were a bit ambivalent towards him.
I note as well, looking at the gate figures, 19,000 2 years ago, now down to 15,000 for this season. So as you mentioned, fans, perhaps inevitably, obviously getting relegated from Premier League, are turning away from the club, and the home form is pretty much diabolical this season. So the fans haven't got a great deal to be cheering about. So this
they've
news
started to make their voices heard from the terraces in terms of banners, wanting the owners.
Made in Birmingham, destroyed in Hong Kong was
and delay no more is their hashtag motto, which if you translate it into the owner's language, apparently is quite a vulgar insult. And that's presumably...
Very intelligent fans as well. But
absolutely.
Presumably that's exactly the reason why this particular phrase was concocted. But the Blues Trust, who are a supporters organisation who do an absolutely fantastic job. They set up these banners. They are, and they're quite happy to, you know, make public notice that they're a non-violent organisation. They don't want any xenophobia or racism or anything to be associated with their dislike of how their club's being run. They simply want change. And they're the ones that have made these banners, the one you've mentioned, made in Birmingham, destroyed in Hong Kong, and the Delay No More banners, which they're now starting to fly at away games. They did that at the Valley on Saturday, and they started at St Andrews the game before. And it's finally a more concerted way of putting their point across to the owners and showing their displeasure. Up until this point, it's all been a little bit splintered and not really that focused in terms of a protest. But you have to give huge credit to the Blues Trust and those behind it who've put these protests together. It's peaceful, it's non-violent, but you know, it's getting noticed, and the Nationals are picking up on it too, as well as the local press, and that can only be a good thing for the Blues Trust.
And all of that that we've just spoken about really just emphasises how difficult it must be for Lee Clark and his staff on the footballing side of things to, you know, to plan long term, even to plan, you know, not long term, even medium term, just next season.
You can't with lone players left, right, and centre. Yeah. We if you think back to a month ago, suddenly Clark had a huge amount of decisions to make because he lost two of his centre-halves. Carl Bartley and Dan Byrne were recalled by their parent clubs. And Paul Robinson, who's been playing at centre-half, of course we all remember him, you know, going through time at clubs like Bolton as a left-back, but he was suspended. And suddenly Birmingham didn't have
surprise.
Yeah, I was going to say
a fit pair of centre halves to call upon. You know, Hayden Mullins was asked to play at centre half. Will Packwood, the young American kid, only just back from a broken leg, was thrust back into service, probably a little bit ahead of schedule. And this is what the problem is when you're relying on loan signings for the spine of your team. Jesse Lingard scored 4 goals on his debut. Went back to Manchester United because David Moyes felt he needed him and didn't particularly want to let him go again. It just so happens that we've managed to get Federico Maceda, who scored 3-2 from Manchester United, stroke of luck. But, you know, that's the lottery of the loan system. And you can't, as you say, you can't even build to medium term as a club when you're relying on the loan players mixing with academy graduates like Callum Riley, Mitch Hancock, Ollie Lee, players like these who are getting far more pitch time. And I wonder if Fode Nabe is wondering whether he should have stayed at St Andrews. The young kid that went to Fulham, there was a bit of a hoo-ha over Fulham sort of nicking him off Birmingham. He's gone to Fulham, barely had a kick. If he was still at St Andrews, he'd be playing now. He'd be getting first-team football. And lots of good things were being said about him a year ago. So a lot of these young players are getting far more pitch time as Birmingham players than they would normally be. That's a good and a bad thing. They're getting experience, they're getting their hands dirty, but you don't want them to get, you know, out-muscled week after week and therefore become disillusioned. You know, you kind of want to drip-feed the odd one here and there into a side, not 3 or 4 or even 5, as Lee Clark's had to do.
Are you perhaps pleasantly surprised over Nikola Zigic, for example, Chris Burke, Peter Lovenkrantz, who have got a lot of experience, okay, that getting on a bit in the likes of Lovenkrantz and what have you, but pleasantly surprised they've decided to stay on?
Yes, well, I think some of them are settled in the area. You can only hope that that's one good thing. I'd be settled in the area if I was Nikola Zigic on £70,000 a week.
It's ludicrous.
I'd be settled anywhere that gave me £70,000 a week.
I mean, how long's that contract go on for?
Till the end of this season.
He'll be gone in the summer then, won't he?
Oh, without question, you know, and it's a question of what he does next. But Lee Clark has not been using him of late. And I think the point was made, I forget who made it, but if you've seen our second goal at Charlton on Saturday, where Tom Adeyemi makes a terrific run through the centre of midfield, and suddenly Maceda sees what's going on and makes a terrific sprint 20 yards to his left to ask for the ball. Nikola Zigic, if he'd been in Maceda's position, simply wouldn't have got there. He wouldn't have had the urgency, the speed to make that run and make that option available to Adeyemi. Now, I don't have a problem with Nikola Zigic per se. It's not his fault that he was signed on a contract without a relegation clause. In terms of his wages. But put it in. When the club needs you most as the most experienced player, for goodness sake, put it in. Show a bit of heart and desire. You scored in a League Cup final for us, for goodness sake. Now, Lee Clark's already had one bust-up with Nikola Zigic last season. Said he put in the worst training session of any player he's ever seen in his time. Now, this year, he's been a little less vocal in terms of his reasons for dropping Nikola Zigic, and I think he feels he still has a role to play. But whilst he's at the club for these last few months, I do hope that Nikola Zigic can inspire the way you're talking about as a senior player, because there's no doubt that Chris Burke does, and he's on the downside less money. Chris Burke is one of those I was scared we were going to lose in this window. Love and Cranch to a degree, yeah, I'd go along with that, but Burke is certainly the one remaining asset that I was quite scared we were going to lose, and the fact that he didn't go anywhere in the window is a source of great pleasure to most Blues fans.
Dan, just looking ahead to the rest of February, reason for optimism really, I think, given your result on Saturday. You've got Huddersfield at home next weekend, and then the weekend after that you're away at Blackpool, but then tomorrow night, we record this on Monday evening, you are away at my beloved Watford, and we have really struggled at home this season. So there's three games there. Will you be optimistic of picking up a good tally of points?
Maybe. I've watched Watford a few times for Talk Sports. You know, Dave, the last time I was there was the Bolton result, which was just this classic case of a team that looks terrific in the first two-thirds of the field but just can't find a cutting edge. However, you had a 2-0 lead at Leicester, and I'm sure your manager will be looking to take the positives out of the fact that Murray and Forestieri, you know, had you two goals to the good at the runaway league leaders. So we'll have to be careful of that, as from our perspective. But surely the lads will be buoyed by the performance and the result at Charlton on Saturday. And I think there's many a Birmingham City reporter, Dave, who, well, I can't think how many times they've used the words "save great Randolph and Darren" in the same sentence, because he has been a really excellent signing from the SPL as our goalkeeper. And if we're going to stand any chance, as we in any game, he's going to have to pull out some great saves, because he's often asked to do that. You know, the inexperience of our players sometimes shows through and sometimes leaves us a little vulnerable, and that's where Randolph can come in. I mean, I have no expectation whatsoever for the remainder of this season. I will be happy merely for us to survive. With all the crap, if you'll forgive the word, that's gone on, I will be deliriously happy that we stave off relegation, and please, somehow, something happens in the close season where ownership issues are resolved. A little bit more money is made available to Lee Clark, if we to assume that he stays as manager, and we can start next season looking a little more competitive, looking a little more structured, because at the moment it's not looking structured at all, or at least Lee Clark can only work with what he's been given.
Yeah, you certainly need something to lift the spirits, that's for sure. But all you've got to do tomorrow night is just give us the first two goals and then you'll return with some points. No problem.
No chance.
Thanks very much for coming on, Dance. We appreciate it. Great
no
to
problem,
talk to
gents.
You.
Really enjoy the show.
That is TalkSport's very own Ian Dante. You can catch him back on air this weekend on Football First on Saturday night. Next, let's switch our attention to the top of League Two, where the Brewers are causing a bit of a stir. We're off to the Pirelli. So, Burton Albion's 1-0 win at Morecambe on Saturday was their 13th clean sheet in their last 22 games. It means Gary Rowett's side are now just 1 point off the automatic promotion places, with only 17 games remaining. So, can they top last year's playoff finish and clinch automatic promotion to the third tier for what will be the first time in their history? Well, let's talk to a man who covers Burton week in, week out for the Burton Mail. It's David Broome. I'm pleased to say that David is on the line right now. David, first of all, thank you very much for coming on the show. Let's talk, if we can, to start with, about Saturday's game at Morecambe. A first win in five, secured by a goal from Zeli Ismailo. I'm sure we're going to talk about it a bit more in a second. Was it a deserved 3 points on Saturday?
Yeah, I would say it was. I mean, when you see the result 1-0 away from home, reasonably late goal, you might think that it's a bit of a snatch and grab, but really they dominated the game throughout. They had the better chances and more chances, And they did what they've done quite often on the road this season and saw out a 1-0 win.
Yeah, you have kept a lot of clean sheets this season, which to me looks like a bit of a difference from last year. I remember seeing the team week in, week out. You had the likes of Calvin Zola, Jax McHomo banging the goals in and seemed to be a very attacking force last year. So has there been a real definite, you know, is that an intentional change in philosophy?
I think it was from Gary Rowett. Because, like you say, it has been a bit of a sea change last season to this season. Last season they were, you know, getting scorelines like 7-6 and 5-4 and things like that, whereas there's been a lot of 1-0s this season. But on the other hand, they're a lot more consistent this season. They haven't got flair players like Magoma and Zola, who you mentioned. They've gone on to pastures new. And the players they brought in are a bit more reliable, I think. You won't get the same type of goals, but you won't concede as many either. So.
Well, I noticed to go as far as last season, you conceded more goals than both Barnett and Aldershot, who of course got relegated, which is quite something.
Yeah.
But also, I love a stat, and out of your 14 victories, 9 have been 1-0 for Burton this season. So it is certainly a certain sea change to it. Are you perhaps surprised that they are still managing to arguably punch above their weight still, Burton?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say they're punching above their weight, because I think they are actually quite entertaining to watch. In most games, they create a lot of chances. They just don't put many away. They don't have someone like Zola or Magoma this season who will score sort of every other game or something like that. So I think perhaps they should be higher in the table than they are, if anything. Their away form has been fantastic. You know, there's nothing much they could do to improve that. It's their home form that's let them down a bit, and I think if they picked up a few wins instead of draws or draws instead of defeats at home, they could be topping the table at this point.
What about Gary Alexander then, who's come in from Crawley? I'm quite surprised that Crawley let him go. I'm not quite sure how much he's played for them this season, but he could surely be a striker that could score the goals that could get Burton into those top three spots.
Well, I would guess that's what they're hoping. They brought in a player of that mould at the start over the summer, Rene Howe. He scored 2 goals.
Who I tipped to be top scorer in League 2 on this show this season.
Well, after his first 2 games, that would have been a good shout, because he got 2 in his first 2 games and then didn't score another goal. Got frozen out of the team.
Sounds like a prediction of mine.
Literally wasn't even making the bench for, I think, 8 games. I think he didn't even make the bench.
Why was that then?
I think he just fell out of favour. The preferred pairing was Adam McGurk and Billy Key. They went through a real purple patch together where one of them was scoring most weeks. And I think maybe Howe wasn't doing enough to get himself back in the team after he dropped out. He did come back in to sort of over Christmas, like back onto the bench, and then he got a few starts when there was injuries. But I think when the chance came to for him to move on, they thought they cut their losses, basically. They brought in Alexander, who's, you know, like I said, a similar sort of player. We've not seen too much of him yet, but hopefully, I think they just needed another option, because after Key and McGurk, with Michael Symes injured at the moment, and the only other striker they had was a youngster called Dominic Knowles. So I think they basically they needed bodies, really, rather than bringing someone in who's necessarily going to be a starter every week.
Tell me a bit about McGurk, because signing from Tranmere, less heralded signing perhaps than Rennie Howe, but he seems to have done very well, 9 goals in the league.
Yeah, when he signed, Gary Rowett said that it was a real coup for Burton to get him, because there was Championship clubs. I think he had sort of discussed like a deal with 2 Championship clubs, but it fell down due to money, and came to Burton maybe to put himself in the shop window for this summer, and has done really well. He started on the right wing when Howe was playing, but then has moved up front and become first choice, really. On Saturday, when they decided to bring Alexander into the starting lineup, it was Billy Key who dropped out rather than McGurk, so it shows that he's sort of first choice there. He is the one player on the pitch who's got that touch of class about him. You know, you can tell that he has and could play at a higher level.
And what of Gary Rowett? He's been there for a while now, not only as manager but assistant beforehand. Just how good is he doing? What sort of budget has he got to play with? You know, what sort of backroom staff has he got to mean he's doing such a good job?
When he was first appointed, I think some people thought that he might. When he came in after Nigel Clough left as assistant to Paul Pesci-Salido, I think a lot of people thought that he should have been the manager, really. And he got his chance after Pesci-Salido left, and really he didn't change the backroom staff too much. Brought in Kevin Summerfield as his assistant manager, And in terms of the budget, really, I wouldn't say Burton's run on a shoestring or anything like that, but they're run very sensibly. The chairman, Ben Robinson, who's been there years, he was there all during Nigel Clough's reign, is a very, you know, a very astute chairman, very nice guy, but would never let the club suffer by spending more than they could, if you see what I mean. He would never want them to overreach and end up doing something like Leeds or Portsmouth or something like that.
Now, this is quite interesting. A year ago, on the 11th of February 2013, we did a podcast called Positives at the Pirelli. And this show is going to come out on the 11th of February 2014. And we spoke last year to Andy Taylor from the Burton Albion Community Trust.
Right.
And Andy talked about sort of we're looking forward to the last few months of the season and what chance have Burton got of going on and getting promoted. Obviously, they finished in the playoffs and lost to Bradford in the semi-final. It is so congested at the top of that division. Do you still give Burton as much chance of any as any of those other sides around them of going up automatically?
I would say so, definitely. I mean, we must have seen every Burton play every team so far, and aside from one or two, I would say literally only one or two games have they been outclassed. I mean, obviously they've lost more than that, but quite a few of those. They had a run where I think something like 5 weeks out of seven they had a player sent off, like stupid sendings off. I mean, justified. You know, the referee's decisions were right, but it was just players doing something stupid. And that cost them a lot of points. That was sort of around September, October time. And apart from those games, there's only been, like I say, one or two where they've been outclassed. And, you know, whether they manage to clinch one of the top three spots or have to go through the playoffs, I would certainly back them this season, possibly more than last season. I think if they got into the playoffs, they would have a great chance of seeing that through this time. Whereas obviously last time they got the result at Bradford, but then couldn't hold on to it in the return leg. I couldn't see them doing something like that this season.
And tell us a bit about the player that scored the winner at the weekend, Zeli Ismaili, Albanian born, but English by nationality, on loan from Wolves. Very promising start.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you think he's played five games and he's got three assists and one goal so far. And only one of those games has been a start. So, two of those games have been starts and three off the bench. But yeah, he still managed to create or score four goals. And he just looks like a real talent every time he comes on. You know, he takes players down the wing and crosses or he cuts inside and like he did on Saturday and scores an absolute screamer. And I think he can... When he started, he's looked really dangerous, but sort of fades in the second half of games. Whereas when he comes off the bench, he just gives them a completely different dimension. He scares the life out of fullbacks, and he's just really exciting to watch. I don't know if you know the thing about him, that he was his coach at the time when he was at Wolves predicted that he was going to be the first £100 million player. And I don't think either Ismaili or whoever was the Wolves manager at the time was very happy that this coach said that, because they said it put a lot of pressure on him.
Mm. When was that said? Do you know? Is it recently?
I think it was a couple of seasons ago. It was the guy who said it is actually now a coach at Derby County. It's a guy. He's called Chris Evans, but not the famous Chris Evans, or the other famous Chris Evans. He said that. So he was obviously moved on from Wolves. Whether it was because he said that or not, I don't know. But, that sort of hung around his neck for a bit. And, you know, I would never say that put him in that sort of category, but he's certainly a very exciting player and could definitely play at a higher level than he's at now.
And the burning question that I've been dying to ask is relating to another one of our bets that we all put on at the start of the season. I also had Rennie Howe as well, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right, I don't remember that.
However, I also, which I said it was a bargain at the time, and it's looking ever more so, I got Burton in the League 2 handicap. To, as long as they finish within 18 points of the top team, I'll get about £100, and they're currently only 5 points off, so I'm looking good for a winner at the moment.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't cash out with that one.
Thanks very much for coming on, David. Good
no
to
problem.
Talk to you. Much appreciated. That is David Bream, sports reporter for the Burton Mail. Next on the show then, let's do My Club, the bit of the show where we give Football League fans 125 seconds to tell us all about their side as we celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League, and today we are focusing on Pompey.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, I'm Harry Davis and my club are Portsmouth.
So, Harry, do you remember your first ever visit to Fratton Park?
I do, yeah. It was a cold winter's day at Fratton Park. It was Gillingham we played at home in 2003, I think it was, in the FA Cup. And I remember Yakubu getting the goal with a header from the back post. And from then on, I was just in love.
What, with Yakubu?
Yeah, your QB. He's a brilliant man.
Is he your favourite player of all time? If not, who is?
My favourite player of all time, it has to be David James, just for his solidarity at the back and the way he just commanded the team throughout the entire time he was there.
Oh, and what about the best moment? You've had a few bad ones in recent times. What about the best moment?
Well, we've had a few good moments as well. We had, obviously, the FA Cup win in 2008. We had the visit of AC Milan to Fratton Park and the 2010 Cup final, as well as buying our club recently. Out of all those, it'll probably have to be buying our club, and the fact that a lot of fans have gone out of their way to put money in, it's been absolutely fantastic to see.
Now, Harry, you've had quite a number of infamous signings over the last recent times. What would you say, or who would you say, rather, is the worst one of the lot?
Oh, wow, the worst signing. It would probably have to be, for me, Andros Bouzaki. We got him from QPR back in the days of Michael Appleton, and he was tipped to be sort of Pompey's version of Pele. And he played about four games and disappeared. Yeah.
Manager-wise as well, there's been a couple of strange appointments, hasn't there?
There has, yeah. Michael Appleton, I said earlier, sort of came out of nowhere from West Brom's coaching academy. We've had everybody and anybody really from the Football League. The moment was... We're with Richie Barker, who's been around sort of the lower leagues, and he knows what he's doing, I think.
I'm a big fan of Velimir Zajec.
Yeah.
And what are your hopes with Richie Barker? You know, it's not been a great season. A lot of people tipped you to go up, according to the bookies. What do you think he can do for the rest of the season and next year?
I think for the rest of this season, it's all about stability and staying up this year and hopefully clambering for sort of a mid-table finish, basically getting the best out of the players this year and training them for next season, bringing in a couple of fresh faces as well. A lot of free transfers will hopefully be available in the summer. So hopefully if we can bring some of them in and hopefully push for sort of a playoff place next season, that'd be great.
Harry, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
That's all right, no worries.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
We will have another edition of My Club, as ever, on the show next week. Right now, let's take a look back at the weekend's action in the Football League. Only 5 games postponed, actually, which is a little bit of a miracle. So, well done to all the groundsmen everywhere who managed to get so many games on. We'll start at the top of the Championship on Saturday. Leicester 2, Watford 2. Leicester couldn't make it 10 straight wins, but they did preserve that 11-match unbeaten league run, thanks to goals from Matty James. And then Danny Drinkwater in injury time. But for your boys, Dave, that is a third success. Excessive away game that you've been 2-0 up and you haven't won any of them.
Yeah, an all too familiar situation, really. And I'm currently embroiled in a bit of a Twitter spat with a Leicester City fan, because earlier on,
is that why Jim's not here tonight?
Not Jim, no. Jim's actually, well, he actually did try and get involved, but you know, everyone's been going on about how great the equaliser was from Danny Drinkwater in the last minute, and absolutely, what a fantastic finish. Yeah, great hit on the half volley into the top goal, and a very little Manuel Almunia could have done about it. But it's sort of one of those situations where fans and managers and pundits will go, well, you know, you've got to hold your hands up sometimes in football when there's a great strike. There's nothing. There is something you can do about it. You can defend properly and stop him from having the shot. You know, we defended pretty well for the whole of the game. But right in the very last minute, we're being pinned back in our own half, and we're playing like a back eight.
Kasper Schmeichel's
got the ball on the halfway line. He's basically in our half. And our three midfielders just completely drop off.
No.
And Drinkwater's got the space and time to bring it down and shoot. If one of them presses him, he doesn't have the chance to put it in the top corner.
No, the person you're having the Twitter spat with says that you're making a substitution at this point, and he's used that as defence.
He's not the person I'm having the spat with. That was mentioned, but well, that doesn't make any difference. It doesn't stop the players who are on the pitch from defending properly. There were still three players standing off him when all it needs is one of them to go to him.
So, there's obviously some kind of defensive issue. I mean, Man City probably in a side because it's Man City, but Bournemouth and now this giving away 2-goal leads is something, maybe it's psychological.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because we have actually looked, in general terms, we've looked better defensively since Zaninho's come in. We've looked a lot more organised, and just there has been a couple of individual errors, unfortunately, that have led to those goals. I always say we look a lot better defensively when Fitzhall's in the team.
Let's not get away from the fact that how well Leicester have done.
Well, you've got a stat, haven't you?
It's a draw, but the stat is, I've seen through Twitter, is that Leicester have won 14 points from losing positions this season. 10 games they've been behind, whereas the whole of last season they won just 16 points from losing positions in 23 games they were behind. It's stats like that.
I've got another stat for you.
Go on.
Last season, Hull City got promoted with 79 points. Leicester are on 67 already. They're only 12 points away from a tally which got a team promoted last season.
Well, with
16 games to go.
You said it last week, Mark. If anyone can throw it away, Leicester can. But surely they won't throw it away now.
Well, there's still this winning run goes on, and we'll see if it's
does it?
Well, this unbeaten run goes on, sorry. And we'll see if it's still going this time next week. By the way, it's still weird to see Paul Konchesky with hair, isn't it?
It is, yes.
That's so bizarre.
He reminds me of one of the characters from Toy Soldiers.
I've never seen
it.
No.
What, of his big square face?
There's like a sergeant-type character in that film.
Get it up. Get the picture up on Twitter. Get it on Google. Okay, Burnley kept the pressure up with a 3-1 win against Millwall. They're now 19 games unbeaten at home since last March, a post-war record. Two more from Danny Ings, who just goes on and on and on.
Fantastic.
Absolutely superb. And penalty less good, but still. And as we record this, there's a big game going on between Derby and QPR up there as well. And Derby lead a goal to nil. John Eustace has got it. I'm going to let you in on a secret. There was a point earlier in the interview with Dance where we had to sort of close the mics because Dave was about to go into a big round.
Couldn't help it.
John Eustace.
A wonderful looping header.
Indeed. Well, we can't really talk about this game because it's not ended yet. And I know there's plenty of other games going on.
I was just
going
to say about Burnley.
Go on.
As an aside to the action, in the post-match interview with Sean Dyche, he took the managerial art of just saying words that don't really mean anything to new levels and said, we are great as a group and as a collective.
those PR lessons from the press team have been paying off.
Absolutely. I got a bit of jit for not mentioning Forest in terms of an automatic promotion contender last week. They did actually drop points at the weekend though. They were 1-0 up at Blackpool, drew 1-1. Reading lost ground, they lost 2-0 at home to Sheffield Wednesday. Wednesday now 11 matches unbeaten and have only lost twice in 14 games since Stuart Gray came in. What a turnaround that is. Exceptional. The other big sort of game on TV in the Championship at the weekend was Yeovil 1, Leeds 2. And obviously Stephen Warnock's ridiculous free kick, which just hung in the air and deposited itself into
the... And then acted like he meant it.
The wind had played a significant part in all three goals, didn't
it? Absolutely.
The corner was astonishing, the way it bent back in. He hit that. That was going way out, way over everyone's head, and it came right back in. McCormack's finished, I think,
superb.
Regardless of the wind, was absolutely outstanding. But that free kick from Warnock, absolutely, the way it just picked up speed towards the end was remarkable.
When you go to a football match, though, and the wind's up, you just think, oh, God. This is going to be awful. It does have a habit of ruining games. Yeah. But when it comes, it goes in your favour like that, you're loving it.
Absolutely. I was at Swindon versus Shrewsbury a few weeks ago, and Swindon's got one end of the ground which is exposed without a roof, kind of similar to Yeovil, and it was awful. And it was more the fact that the goalkeepers hadn't realised it was windy as well. So when they were going one way, both goalkeepers were guilty of doing it, just kicking it up in the air, and it would land probably around about the 18-yard box line. But going back to Leeds... I realise that they've just won one game this season where Ross McCormack hasn't scored, and now he's getting back into a rich vein of form as well after all the debacle they've had off the field. Maybe Ross McCormack won't be there much longer.
They're 5 points outside the playoffs. It was crucial for them to keep hold of him.
Quick thing on Chiellino: if I was running a Fiat 500 in Italy, now I've got the chance to run a Ferrari, he says about Leeds United. Now I want to forget about Cagliari. My heart is with Leeds, and apparently he wants to work with Brian McDermott. Is this just a way of getting him past this fit and proper persons test, and then once he's in the door, Brian?
Interesting you bring up the fit and proper persons test, because there's been a lot of talk about this, and I don't want to stick up for the Football League, because it is clear that there have been owners who perhaps are not fit and proper. But it's very easy to say, how have you let this person through? How have you let that person through? Who are the league to sit down and decide who is a fit and proper person, other than looking at criminal records, financial records, records as in been in charge?
Chiellino does have a criminal record, though,
businesses.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, fine. And that may well be the case, that he shouldn't pass the test. But there are other examples where, you know, people may not be of the right, you know, just in terms of common sense, may not be the right fit for a club, but they can still pass the test. So it is a bit more difficult than just sitting someone down and having a chat with them. You know, it's hard to determine sometimes whether these people's true intentions are going to come to fruition down the line.
Once he gets in, or if he does get in, he then needs to see if Brian McDermott passes the fit and proper sackings test, doesn't he?
He certainly does, yeah.
as trialled on this show. League One, Leyton Orient 1, Peterborough 2. Orient blew the chance to go top because Wolves and Brentford's games were off, and they were 1-0 up with about 2 minutes to go as well. Twice in a row now, Orient have lost at the death like that in the last couple of weeks. Peterborough now back into the playoff spots after MK Dons won 3-0 at Walsall, which was one of the shock results of the weekend.
Is there McLeod rolling back the years?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The third goal, that was the one, fantastic finish.
But there was a red card in that, wasn't there? A bit like in the Reading game, it was quite early on. I think actually it was already 1-0 at that stage. Yeah. Preston won 2-1 at Tranmere. Joe Garner got two more, and I think it was Steve Claridge or Manish, I can't remember. It was Manish actually on the Football League show, listed their strike force. Kevin Davis, Craig Davis, Paul Gallagher, Ian Hume, Stuart Bevan, and Joe Garner. Goals in that.
Absolutely. Certainly you'd expect it at League One. I mean, some of those players have shown flashes at Championship level here and there, if not consistently. Obviously, Kevin Davis being the standout one who's had a decent career in the Premier League and even played for England, of course. But for League One, that is outstanding.
And appeared on this podcast to highlight of his career.
Having said that, they're fourth and 55 points, so a long way off the automatic spots, and they've got such a rich vein of talent up front that perhaps they should be doing a bit better.
Port Vale 2, Swindon 3. Carl, Swindon 2.
Good, I was hoping you'd mention it.
2-0 down, came back to win 3-2. Another Alex Pritchard beauty.
Yeah, absolutely no idea where that result came from. Terrible away form. Alex Pritchard's...
what a free kick.
Fourth or fifth or sixth. Got MK Dons, Rotherham, Carlisle. He's done it against those teams this season. All right into the postage stamp area.
Absolutely super.
So excellent, yeah.
What are they going to call the postage? When like, in 20 years' time, when the Royal Mail and post, as we know it, is gone, what are they going to call it? Like the subject heading?
Tweet suggestions, please, help us out.
The attachment box. You have to be. but no, Swindon, we're going under the radar this season. We'll still
keep it that way.
The table, and who knows, we're one game from Wembley now. That was another comeback against Peterborough, being 2-0 down and a man down.
Yes, in the JPT. So,
you appear to be the only club that's managed to get Niall Ranger to play well.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's still having a few off-the-field problems.
Do we know how that fan is, by the way? We got taken ill midweek. Is he?
I believe he is still in hospital. I believe that was a very weird scenario.
Yeah,
for those,
horrible
of course,
situation.
Didn't watch it, of course, a fan collapsing in the stand. And there was only about 3 minutes left. I'm sure the referee could have got away of just calling it off there.
Stickler for the rules.
Yeah,
there
probably
in
is an archaic rule which says they had to play it or abandon the entire match.
Let's talk a bit about this chap at Crewe then. You're going to help me out and pronounce his name here, Dave.
Yes.
Uchi
Ikpeazu.
Yes, on loan from Watford. Scored two, I think, his first ever career goals in a 3-3 draw at Bradford. He looked good. Crewe looked good at the moment.
He did, yeah. They've had a little bit of a revival, haven't they?
Four wins in nine. Giving themselves a chance.
Story about this guy is he's never played for Watford. We signed him on a free transfer in the summer because he was yet to sign a professional contract with Reading, I believe, which is the academy that he came through. Last season in the Reading academy, he scored something like 20 goals in 20 games or 25 goals in 25 games, something like that. It was a pretty much 100% scoring record, I believe. And so there's certainly a lot of hype about him and a lot of potential there. And he's found it difficult to get opportunities. And he's never done who's ever going to get really opportunities in our first team this season. So it's a perfect move for him to go out and follow in the footsteps of someone like Sombalonga, who did so well going out on loan. And unfortunately for us, has moved on to Peterborough and is banging them in. But perhaps next season he could be a real find for us.
Well, just before we go into League Two, a couple of teams really on the slide. Shrewsbury, 8 defeats in 11. They need a new manager in, I think, because they're heading towards relegation at the moment. Carlisle as well are having a real bad run of
form. Can we talk about Graham Kavanagh's hair?
Well, how silver it is.
It's remarkable. No, not that fact. I mean, it's seemingly been silver forever.
Paul Konchesky and Graham Kavanagh's hair in one show.
Completely shaved all over, apart from that bit at the front, which is that rock solid, hard gelled bit of like spikes right at the front.
The kind of haircut you had when you were like 10 years old.
It's amazing. And I want to know what it looks like without any product in. When it comes out of the shower and he just dries it, just a bit flapping along at the front.
So, in a roundabout way, you just said you want to be in the shower when Graham Kavanagh's there.
That's, you're twisting my words there.
Right, let's move on.
Just get him to take a selfie.
Okay. Is he on Twitter? Someone tweeting. League Two then. Well, we've obviously talked about the race at the top with Burton. A nice bit on the Football League show, I thought, about Scunthorpe and Russ Wilcox.
Russ Wilcox, ridiculous bit when he walked out of the tunnel. It was like X Factor.
Russ Wilcox. 1-0 draw against Chesterfield. Both stay first and second.
But that's five draws in a row, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah, but
despite
still
the fact
unbeaten.
They're unbeaten. But they are. It's five draws in a row, is still a lot of points being dropped.
Good point.
They're still up there and they're still looking quite healthy. But that's not a run you want to be on.
Before you know it, if you do that, teams such as Burton, who we've discussed, will be right up with you. Yep.
Delightful chip from Scott Hogan for his hat trick goal in Rochdale's win at AFC Wimbledon. And there was a much needed win for Mansfield at home to Southend. Southend dropping points after a really good run. But I suppose if you look down the bottom, the two big stories, I would say, are Wickham. who have now gone. I said at the top of the show, we'd name and shame the team who haven't scored a home goal in the league for 7.5 hours. It's Wickham Wanderers.
That might be Middlesbrough when you mentioned.
No, it's Wickham Wanderers. Gareth Ainsworth coming under increasing pressure. They've won one of the last 15. Ooh. And they're one place above the relegation zone. But looking at it from a positive point of view, it could be worse. It could be Northampton losing 2-0 at home to Plymouth on Saturday and on Tuesday night. This game might well have already been played by the time you hear this. Torquay versus Northampton.
Well, weather permitting, of course.
Yes. It's written in the stars that Northampton will be relegated and Oxford United will be promoted.
Yes.
And I didn't realise how bad... I know how bad they are at the bottom, but their top goal scorer has got 2 goals.
Yeah,
Northampton. That's how bad it is at the moment.
Ben, the Wind scored 3 at the weekend.
That's a good point. Ben Trasler on Twitter, when I did check, did seem pretty resigned, I think, to the...
He's been resigned since about late October, ever since they went into the bottom two, I think.
I suppose we should congratulate Sheffield United, by the way, before we go on that win at Fulham in the FA Cup.
You.
Now technically better than Manchester United, I think. Sort of.
Exactly.
It really worked like that.
Yeah.
And a good win in the league as well before the Sheffield United fans complain we didn't mention them. 2-0 against Shrewsbury. And Sheffield United play Nottingham Forest this Sunday in the FA Cup fifth round. It's one of two all Football League ties, the other being Sheffield Wednesday against Charlton on Saturday. So we're going to have two Football League sides, at least two, in the quarterfinals, which is excellent news.
I was listening to an interview with Johnny Jackson the other day, the Charlton captain. And obviously they are in terrible form in the league, really not going well for them at the moment. But he did seem to be really looking forward. He said the whole squad is really up for the cup run. You know, they can sense that they've got a chance to face a team who are in a similar sort of position to them in the league, despite being in better form in Sheffield Wednesday. So if they can just win that one match, they're in the quarterfinals. And, you know, players, you know, that are playing for Charlton, like Johnny Jackson, you know, probably have never got that far in the FA Cup before, may never again. So it may be going really badly for them in the league, but there is something positive for the fans and the players to get their teeth into there.
And Wigan are at
Cardiff.
And Brighton are hosting Hull. So those are the other two Football League representatives, Wigan and Brighton, that are left in the FA Cup.
I think Wigan have got a decent chance. Cardiff, as we said with Fulham, are desperate to stay in the Premier League, especially after losing the South Wales derby. You know, there'll be real pressure on Solskjaer to turn it around in the league, and the FA Cup is a distraction that... maybe in contrast to Charlton, they can certainly do without. So Wigan, good opportunity for them. And I'd say less so Brighton. But, you know, they're still capable of, I'd say they're still capable of getting a result.
That game is on Monday night next week, and that is when we'll be recording the next show, which will be out next Tuesday. Thank you very much for listening. There's loads of action this week, isn't there? Midweek and in the Championship, League One and League Two at the weekend.
Yes.
And we'll be reviewing all that on the show.
I'm currently
next week.
I am taking us back in a nice big loop to where we started.
We've gone full circle.
I'm currently umming and ahhing whether to go to Vicarage Road tomorrow night to see Watford against Birmingham.
I thought you were going
to
say Prince then for a second.
And that's it. Well, because I, having scoured Twitter, believe that there could well be another show on Tuesday night. So what do I do? Do I buy? Do I go and then risk missing out on him again?
Well, maybe Prince can just solve
yellow or purple is the decision I'm faced with.
Maybe Prince can just solve everything at once and just play a gig at Vicarage Road.
He must be mates of Elton.
Yeah,
surely.
Absolutely. We'll get Elton down. We'll have a lovely time.
You can tweet us this week.
Dan is a musician. He can play the drums.
That's true. We've got a little band going there.
Yeah.
You can tweet us at Wagyu Podcast. The blog's on the website, wearegoingup.co.uk. The SoundCloud page is soundcloud.com/Wagyu Podcast. The full interviews from last week's recruitment special are on there if you'd like to check them out unedited. That is it. Thank you, DC. Enjoy Prince if you get to see him.
Thanks.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you.
We will speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up Podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.